Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Well, it is Turkey Eve, and we're going to have a very special show with Aaron Tilbury and the Jonah Project a little bit later on in the show. But if you cannot listen to this entire show, it will be rebroadcasted this Saturday at 1 p.m. And, of course, you can always download the podcast, and you probably need to do that anyway, just so you can stay abreast with all the content so that you can garner what Republic Review is and how you can help and how you can understand what Reclaiming the Republic it is, what Reclaiming the Republic is. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Anyway, the local announcements that I have is strictly the Republican Coffee Club is not meeting on Friday this week because of Black Friday. And like I said earlier, they seem to prefer cream in their coffee. They're not meeting on Black Friday. So, the following Saturday, November 25th, is the class for self-governance in the Valley. Go to my website on the podcast page and you can get the details of how you can sign up. It's $50 a person. I think they have family discounts and so forth. You really want to attend this if you want to understand self-governance. And the details, again, for this are on my podcast page, and the details for the Republican Coffee Club at 7 in the morning, those are on my links page. So really quick with this Judge Moore fiasco, I just want to let you know that these things always happen last minute. And as a matter of fact, when people start injecting themselves to calling candidates to stand down, this is all political. The fact that people waited to the last minute to try to bring these charges up. I mean, this guy had a career as a judge and now they're bringing this up. It's only now that the progressive machine is feeling a real threat by this guy taking this seat. And so they're trying to do anything and everything they can. So what has to happen is this really has to, you know, be suppressed, and people need to keep their mouths shut and let this go forward. If Judge Moore is actually guilty and led an investigation, then he can be impeached as a senator and be replaced via the process. Let the elect, because this is strictly a political ruse, and it just infuriates me that we allow the progressives to do this. There should be people held liable because too many elections are thrown because of nefarious intent and bad information or fake news like this. And I'm not judging one way or the other what the situation is. The fact that this is strictly a political move should be repugnant to anybody and everybody who loves their republicanism and the democracy process that gets our representatives to where they need to be. I will next week have Trevor Lawton on the show, and I think you're going to really enjoy his perspective, and we'll have him on a few more times. But I also have my Thanksgiving message with George Washington's proclamation. But in addition, we're going to have our local hero, Aaron Tilbury, on, like I said, and he's going to share some updates regarding his organization. And so before we get into that, like I said, I really consider Thanksgiving as our most sacred holiday that we actually as a nation observe. Why is that? Well, I want you to understand that the Thanksgiving holiday, the proclamation, even though most people understand that the real first Thanksgiving started up in New England with the Pilgrims and the Indians and so forth, the real truth behind that that's been kind of let out in the news over the past decade or so is that the reason the Pilgrims were starving, the reason they were in the situation that they were for a couple of years was really due to more of the fact that they were failing in socialism because they had these things called the commons. They shared how they grew their food and so forth. And the commons brought a term called the tragedy of the commons, where people, when it came close to harvest, in the middle of the night went out and harvested so that there wasn't enough food for everybody that was supposed to share the food. And so they recognized that people were going to cheat the system, and that's exactly what happens whenever you induce socialism and whenever you have entitlements and so forth, people cheat the system. And so back to this proclamation with George Washington, this had nothing to do with being saved from starving. It had nothing to do with a bountiful harvest. this proclamation, and as a matter of fact, it really wasn't George Washington. This was a unanimous formal request from both houses of Congress that the federal government and the people set aside a day devoted to the service for the great and glorious being who blessed us with this great republic and endowed it with our Constitution. Our republic's Thanksgiving is not and has never been, as I've said, about pilgrims and turkeys. This pageant of what is so-called the first Thanksgiving with pilgrims, Indians, has basically subverted our history by the early days, and I should say the early day progressives, who were really trying to seek and masking and hiding our real history. The real fact is that as we start exposing the American Pilgrim story that the progressives have used in brainwashing this false narrative, this was the first failure of socialism, like I said. And instead of teaching the truth and learning from the failed design of socialism, they want to try to convince us to accept it again into failure, because it will always fail. It's designed to fail. And as a matter of fact, I'm trying to remember the guy's name that the intent with all of these entitlements is to collapse the system. And so with the topics of all of the different social welfares and all the different programs and entitlements that we have, I don't have time to do all of that. And as a matter of fact, I've covered this, and this all stems back to Plato and his Republic, and why the state is constantly trying to seek the ultimate power over the people, which is an ideology of subjugation. And so I try to differentiate that, and that's one of the reasons why I try to go into the Republic and Plato, Platonism and statism, so that you can understand those things. So moving into, and I don't know, let me see, how much time do I have, Mr. Producer? I have 3 minutes. So let me go ahead and start this proclamation. And then when I get the 1 minute sign, I'll kind of take a break and I'll editorialize as we go. This was done on, I think, the 3rd of October, not the 23rd, but the 3rd. And this is George Washington. Whereas it is the duty of all nations to acknowledge the providence of Almighty God, to obey His will, to be grateful for His benefits, and humbly to implore His protection and favor. And whereas both houses of Congress have, by their joint committee, requested me to recommend to the people of the United States a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God, especially by affording them an opportunity peaceably to establish a form of government for their safety and happiness. Now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November next, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being. So I'm going to add this here. We're not supposed to be, feeding ourselves and indulging, but we're supposed to be devoting our service to that great and glorious being, setting aside this one day to providing service for that great being, who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, and that will be, that we may then unite in rendering unto Him our sincere and humble thanks for His kind care and protection of the people of this country previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies of the favor, able impositions of His providence in the course and conclusion of the late war. So right there, he's basically telling us that we need to be sincere, humble in thanking Him, and in doing so, we do that with service. There's a little bit more I need to get into, and I will kind of do a little dovetailing over that because we're really close to the hard break. But I wanted to get started on this because I want to afford our hero as much time as I possibly can. So, I want you to even consider this, to get a copy of this. This will be on Reclaiming the Republic, or the link to this from the Avalon Project. get a copy of this and please read this to your family so that you can understand what the real light of Thanksgiving was to this nation, not to the state of Massachusetts or what was known as the Puritan colonies and that movement up in the Northeast at that point in time. So we're at the heartbreak here. So folks, please stay tuned. We will be right back with the rest of Washington's story here. Okay, so I am back, and I do have our hero with us, but before I do, let me finish this proclamation from George Washington. So let me start off with the first meaty paragraph again, and now therefore, and I'm reading this to you, folks, so that you get the evidence. I'm giving you evidence that this is a Christian nation. I'm giving you evidence of what the framers perceived at the time when they created this nation or this republic, and what we need to do to realign ourselves and get away from the secular progressive paradigms of Thanksgiving being about pilgrims and turkeys. It has everything to do with our Constitution, our government, and our benefactor, the great Almighty. And so let me get into what he says here. And now, therefore, I do recommend and assign Thursday, the 26th day of November next, to be devoted by the people of these states to the service of that great and glorious being who is the beneficent author of all the good that was, that is, or that will be, that we may then all unite in rendering unto him our sincere and humble thanks for his kind care and protection of the people of this country, previous to their becoming a nation, for the signal and manifold mercies of the favor, able interpositions of his providence in the course and conclusion of the late war, for the great degree of tranquility, union, and plenty which we have since enjoyed, for the peaceable and rational manner in which we have been able to establish constitutions of government, for our safety and happiness, and particularly the national one now lately instituted, for the civil and religious liberty with which we are blessed, and the means we have of acquiring and diffusing useful knowledge, and in general, for all the great and various favors which he has been pleased to confer upon us. Let me be clear here. He's saying that we have been instituted for the civil and religious liberty. Don't confuse liberty with freedom. Freedom is anarchy. Liberty comes with responsibility and accountability. And so this was not a nation that was founded on religious freedom. And I deplore those words. But anyway, let me go back to what he was saying. And also that we may then unite in most humbly offering our prayers and supplications to the great Lord and the ruler of nations, and beseech him to pardon our national and other transgressions, to enable us, whether in public or private stations, to perform our several and relative duties properly and punctually, to render our national government a blessing to all the people by constantly being a government of wise, just, and constitutional laws, discreetly and faithfully executed and obeyed, to protect and guide all sovereigns and nations, especially such as have shown kindness to us, and to bless them with good governments, peace, and concord, to promote the knowledge and practice of true religion and virtue, and the increase of science among them and us, and generally to grant unto all mankind such a degree of temporal prosperity as he alone knows to be best. Given under George Washington's hand in New York on the 3rd day of October. This was literally out the gate because Congress didn't even get into session until May that year. And so the many things that they were working on, the Bill of Rights, this was one of those things that was the fruit of their initial labor. And so I want you to put this into context, folks, that here he is talking about the importance of having a just government with constitutional laws that they are faithfully executing. This is the whole point of my show, Reclaiming the Republic, because we have unconstitutional laws, unconstitutional government, and the only way we're going to get rid of this is through Republic Review. And the only way I am going to gain constitutional warriors is by you understanding that these things are well out of bounds and start understanding the context of what the framers gave us and by using their words. And so let's start with Thanksgiving. Let's start with, like I said last week, on November 11th was the state of Washington's birthday. Let's start recognizing these important things that are hallmarks to putting us back into a constitutional paradigm so that we can start focusing on these righteous laws that the framers gave us and start looking at these usurpations of our rights and our liberties that the federal government has instituted since then. So I'm going to stop ranting now, and what I want to do is I want to get the hero here online, and I want to actually get some updates. So Aaron's with us today from the Jonah Project, Aaron Tilbury, and with the little bit of time we have left, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you having me on.
I have to kind of slow down because there's so much content I have in the front, if you've noticed, that I have to take it down now that I get into a personal level.
That's all right.
And how is the project doing?
We're doing well. I talk to our team about being people rich. You know, we're a small group, and so resources can be difficult to come by, but we're people rich. We've built... we're really blessed to have an amazing group of individuals and a core of some people that have been from the very beginning kind of supporting me. And then when I started building a team, kind of our first early team members, and we have quite a core of those people. So we're doing pretty well.
Okay. So last time you were on, you had two houses and you wanted to get a third.
Yeah, our goal, we really felt like we needed to get a boys' home going. A lot of the calls we get are for young men. But the reality is that we also have to be wise about how we build, if we're going to build, and what we can sustain. We need to love well. We got to do what we're doing now really well, as opposed to just looking to grow and with volunteers, it can be precarious, right?
Sure.
It's managing that growth.
You're getting what you pay for is what you're saying.
Well, the reality is I probably, I could not put an ad probably just like on Craigslist or on Monster.com or Jobs.com and necessarily get the quality of team members that I have right now at the core.
Right.
That are devoting their time. But in order for us to, for us to sustain a larger amount of victims that we're housing, that we're rescuing, some of that weight's going to have to fall on the community. And the reality is we're going to need some other people to step up and believe in what we're doing and help fund that, or
right,
step up and become house leaders or advocates,
right,
for these kids.
Right. And so that's kind of interesting because that's similar to what I'm trying to do too. I'm trying to make a very similar plea with the community businesses, community leaders, and so forth, in saying, we've got to focus on constitutional stuff. And I think some of the stuff that we're doing is a little bit overlapping because we both are, I want to say, champions for individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And anybody that is taken into, custody, hostage, or what have you, where they've lost, whether that be psychological or whether that be physical, it doesn't matter. It's a loss of liberty. And so, with the little time that we have left, I know that there's probably a lot of good news, and we probably want to save that for the next segment. But
that sounds good.
Is there any really big banners that you guys overcome or anything?
Yeah, well, we talked a little bit about the railroad, right, that we were kind of trying to build.
Sure.
One thing I can tell you right now is we're like approaching double digits in terms of kiddos that we've been able to help. Just recently, there was a video on our Facebook of us from a resident that we were housing and taking care of, and put the word out to someone that they knew that was in trouble.
Okay.
And so at 2 o'clock in the morning, we were able to perform a rescue actually on the other side of the country, and where I could not actually get a hold of any resources in that part of the country. And so we wound up handling it all. So that was pretty cool. And I was pretty proud of our team for being answering the call on that one.
Okay, well, you know, that's great. Ended right at the perfect time, right up on a heartbreak. Folks, we've got a lot of really amazing information that's coming forward for you, and so please stay tuned, and I think you'll find this a very good Thanksgiving message for you. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Thank you. Okay, so we are back, and so let me give you kind of a recap. Aaron Tilbury is the man in charge. He's the founder of the Jonah Project, which is right here in Spokane. And so I don't want to rehash and utilize a lot of our valuable airtime, but we've had him on twice before, and I believe it was July and August when we aired our interviews with Aaron. So please go back to the Reclaiming the Republic podcast page and download those podcasts so you can garner some of the things that he's been doing regarding the relocation, safe housing, advocacy, and that type of stuff, and some of the stories that he's provided to give you some details as to what he's kind of gone through and how he really, on a day-to-day basis, can be risking his life and trying to save the lives of others. And so that's why I refer to him as a real hero, because it's not like he's getting any pay, and it's not like, you know, it's his responsibility. He is basically becoming a champion for those who can't champion for themselves. And anyway, let me get back to Aaron, because I want to let the people know that, you know, has there been some good things? You said you had some news for us. So.
Yeah, I have a couple of cool things I wanted to share with you, actually. One thing that I think it'll be the first time I'm formally sharing this, so that's
okay.
That'll be fun. You know, and this is not just me trying to be humble or self-deference, but I want to address, I really appreciate it, again, you having me on here, and I want to address just kind of the hero idea. And I want to just state for everybody who's listening, for one of the women or children who are in some of the most horrific life situations that you could possibly imagine. We're working with a woman right now who was locked in a room for 10 years with no windows, like the type of stuff where you're literally scratching lines on a door to remind yourself how long you've been there. When we're talking about those types of situations, and that child or woman is brave enough and courageous enough to reach out and call a local telephone number to someone she doesn't know, with, at this point in their life, minimal or no hope at all that there would be someone that would come and care for them. And they do it anyway, right? They reach out that one last time in hope. That to me is a hero. And so I want to make that statement formally, because I appreciate beyond measure, honestly, GR, you have me on, and the kind words. That's just my heart. And I feel I wouldn't do these women justice if I didn't share that.
No, I understand that, but I do also appreciate and understand profoundly the risks you take.
Thank you. I do
appreciate in doing that. What you do. I mean, it's one thing for a person to go into the academy to learn, you know, gun handling, safety, you know, and how to clear rooms in the military and avenues of fire and so forth, and coordinating with other people. You're out there alone. You're doing this. And it's not like you've got this real bonus on hazard duty pay. Every time you get out there, you get more bonuses, right?
No. I will. But here's the good news. The cool thing is recently we've actually been able to develop a pretty good team. So I don't have to go alone anymore. Certainly anything that's going to, you know, lead to a situation which we call, you know, going dynamic, where it might get crazy, that I'm certainly going to be involved in those. And I've been doing a lot of the intakes and assessments lately. But we're starting to grow a really qualified team, which is great. I've got a couple of guys, just to give a shout out to Howard and Nick on my team, who are in the mental health profession, and they help with identifying medications and all sorts of things. So, like, for example, just recently we were called by a local agency that works with homeless folks, and we were doing an assessment with an individual, a young woman, that they found out was being trafficked, and she was on a meth bender, you know. And so having other people that are skilled with those types of pharmaceuticals and understand like what's going on there,
right,
on my team is great. So that's been a steady and growing kind of blessing for us. But the pieces of news I had for you, one in particular, this is probably the biggest one for me. This is like a life defining moment, like one of those things where I realize part of what I was called to do, it was this. And we talked about the railroad, and the other thing that I don't know if we actually got into in the other segments was working on protocol to support victims and victim services when they come forward with information for law enforcement or when they want to be out of this life, how that's going to work. And not protocol just to support the victim, but protocol that supports law enforcement in handling those situations.
Right.
And there are some models for this. And recently, what we did is we took about a 28-page document that has been really successful in its utilization down in LA. And we kind of, we morphed that into a smaller document that's more relative to the amount of agency, which isn't much, that we have here in Spokane. It's about a 4-page document. And I want to also give a shout out to our ombudsman, Bart Logue, because he really helped in with some of the verbiage and kind of the approach and the lens with which we look at this document. But we're going to be putting something with the help of the Human Rights Commission here in Spokane, putting something forward that we hope will become an ordinance in this town and become a model for other areas, other cities, with how we approach dealing with a child or a young woman who has been brutalized in this way and now needs help and is willing to engage in receiving some advocacy and some services. So I can share more detail with that, like probably on our website and on Facebook and that type of thing. I won't take up more time here, but it's something that people should be looking for. We're going to need their public support. In essence, this will make it so that, like, at a raid, for example, a police officer doesn't have to be a trained trauma therapist. They actually have the ability to call advocacies and advocates from different agencies and have somebody like that show up and help facilitate that flow of information and care, so that really a law enforcement agent can do what they're trained to do and what they want to do, which is collect information, put bad guys away, and help clean up a terrible mess.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you're getting more organized in the community, which is a good thing.
Yeah, yes.
You're creating stronger connections.
We are.
And relationships, which is critical.
We are. We're asked by UGM to come down and work with a couple of victims. And, you know, obviously they've been in the community doing this stuff for decades.
Right.
So that's a huge affirmation. We just did a 3-hour training session for communities and schools.
Right. Yeah. So with the little time we have left in this segment, is there a need? We can get into the needs more in the next segment.
Yeah.
But what would you consider your number one need right now?
Yeah, our number one need right now is reliable monthly funding. What we've got to be able to do as we continue to build groups of advocates and get highly trained people, ultimately, if we were going to really, really put a dent on this problem, and we can, we are already flying by the numbers that Homeland Security and the FBI say are reasonable for the percentage of victims rescued and how many of them go on to lead a normal life. If we invested in what we're doing now on a larger scale, we could seriously stop this problem here in Spokane. That's going to require funding. I need to be able to, at some point, even on a part-time basis, hold on to some of these advocates and pay them.
So let me ask you this. So, because on the larger scale,
yeah,
because we understand how big this is.
Yes.
This is going to take a lot of commitment, and a lot of that is financial commitment.
Yeah.
Have you gone to the cities' chambers of commerce, such as the City of Spokane's Chamber of Commerce, Spokane Valley. I don't know about Liberty Lake and Heights or Airway Heights, you know, Deer Park. Every little city, usually they have, you know, chambers of commerce.
Yes.
And so have you gone and basically appealed to the businesses to become permanent or, you know, monthly providing sponsors?
Yeah.
Have you done that?
Yeah. You know, it's something that we've brought up a number of times. We've talked about, and we just recently did receive from a group of like a Rotary community here of businesses. This is actually amazing. We applied for a $2,500 grant. We were hoping for even a portion of that. That's 2 months of housing for 8 victims. Right,
right.
That's a huge deal. And they told us that not only was it the quickest vote that they ever had, they approved us for $3,000 instead of $2,500.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Now that's from a Rotary Club, but yeah. What have you gone?
We have. No. We're approaching them.
Given you a chance to come onto the floor and address the body of the Chambers of Commerce and appeal to them?
Yeah. The opportunities that they've given us is to speak about the problem, to educate the community. They've asked us to help kind of support their resolutions and some of their kind of political stuff that they've got going on. We've received zero financial support.
So what I think you need to do is put in context the problem financially, that if you don't have this kind of money, you can't do these things.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, it's and I think I don't know if we hit this figure, but I had heard something locally that there's like a figure, it's over $1 million, like $1.3 or $1.4 million that the average person would contribute to the economy if they were working between the age of 18 and 65 when they might retire.
Right.
So if we're talking about 1,500 kids that are stolen out of that economy times $1 million, is it worth a $5 million prison to put the bad guys away? Is it worth investing in a couple? Absolutely, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. Well, perfect timing. We've just hit another hard break. And so folks, this will be our last segment coming up, so please stay tuned. You won't want to miss it. Thank you very much, and we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Okay, so we're back, and I don't know why we didn't record the break, because that was a great conversation. But anyway, the one thing I didn't get a chance, because we literally ran out of time, and I want to say this, because I was really trying to pin Aaron down into a yes or no. Has the Chambers of Commerce let him come in? And he basically kind of answered that they will come in, let him come in on a political perspective, as long as he's willing to compromise or support what they want. Because I think people are starting to recognize your organization, Aaron, has some political clout. In other words, you're starting to get the glimmer and the shine and that luster that some people are kind of liking, and they feel like they can leverage with you, which to me is repugnant, and it's just despicable that people just can't put aside their political, you know, positions and their differences and go, this is something we need to support. And as far as I'm concerned, the Chamber of Commerce should let you come in and say, how much does it cost to run and what is it you need? And then, you know, you tell them the bottom line of your business model. This is what you really need to be successful in the city of Spokane. And then they can say, you know, are there any businesses willing to contribute? Because I'm going to go into this next thing.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for ranting, but governments have no position in taking from those who have and giving to organizations like yours. Let's just get them to stop taking so much taxes so people and businesses can become far more charitable. Because I truly believe the luster of the Jonah Project will even be greater and brighter if businesses were allowed and people were allowed to give freely instead of government taking so much.
Well, I'll address one part of that and stay out of the other. In some ways, I'm kind of as apolitical as it gets, but I've been talking with my team and kind of joking lately that what I really love for us as an organization to be is not even really apolitical, but is like bipolitical. And I know I'm making up terms here, but just the idea of being an agent of reconciliation among people. That, right, obviously that's what our kind of work is focused on. But in terms of addressing the charity, here's the thing. Most of the anti-prostitution laws, for example, right? A lot of people see trafficking as prostitution, were developed because of the business community. I'm not saying the business community were the only people that had a stake in it, but most of the ways that they were handled had to deal with the fact that this stuff existed on like street corners. You're out in front of restaurants and hotel rooms. That's changed so much because of the online factor. And so I think business people probably see things in a different way. But and you mentioned the word earlier, nefarious. I mean, it's not any less nefarious, and it's always been. And we could certainly use the help and the charity. That ultimately the weight of this project, it's truly a project of the people, right? Like you said, we're not salaried people; we're volunteers. Everybody in the community has a place at this table. This isn't us building our own kingdom here. It's us wanting to provide, for example, to UGM or Life Services or communities and schools or the public high schools or Lutheran Community Services, those other agencies that call us and ask us, the FBI, right, local law enforcement, that ask us for free to house children and women. And we've done so for several years, right? And the community needs to answer, is this something that we want to sustain and actually do away with this issue of trafficking? Do you want to sustain an anti-trafficking movement? I've worked with other agencies like Justice Ministries in Charlotte, North Carolina, who is a top-notch rescue organization. Other agencies, just recently, we got a call from a gal who came across a trafficking victim at a crisis shelter in Houston after the storms. And she is just literally down there, knew a pastor here who knew me, and calls us from Houston, and we were able to facilitate resource. So these types of things are happening, but these other agencies are actually having to pull back. And they're talking about even doing away with housing completely and going, in a sense, not backwards, but pruning and focusing on a certain area. Right now, right, the Jonah Project is the only housing that we have for trauma victims and trafficking victims in Spokane, and for kids and for women. So the community is going to have to answer, is this something we want to continue to sustain? And is it even something we want to continue to grow? The FBI and Homeland Security say 99% of victims will never be rescued. We're blowing those numbers away here in town. They say of the 1% that are rescued, only 4% will ever lead a normal life. Now, some of these stories are not being told, but I have story after story of young lady who is, you know, working at a new job and has a new boyfriend or is getting married. And a young woman who was beaten and left for dead in a porta potty who wanders into a bakery here locally, who is now in Portland getting ready to be married and has started her own street ministry. I have story after story like this. And if this was a business, people would be buying stock in it. Right. So yeah, we need some help.
No, but you know, folks, we're talking about somebody's daughter. We're talking about, you know, somebody's son. We're talking about maybe somebody's mother.
Yeah.
And these are human beings that we're talking about, that Aaron and his group of heroes has coalesced, united, and have stood up in our community to do the right thing. And as he says, how many competitors or how many other stocks or businesses out there that are doing what the Jonah Project is? You're really the only one to this level, right?
Yeah, there's no one else is providing rescue and relocation here. I mean, outside of obviously, again, if things go dynamic, we'll call law enforcement.
Okay.
But that's it.
So yeah. Everybody of the Eastern Washington area, you should be able to hold your head up with pride that it happened here on the dry side, not where the moss is growing in between the ears. We can be a beacon for reclaiming the republic. We can be a beacon for this republic in saving liberty, whether it be for these individuals or whether it be for, you know, all of us in saving our Constitution. And that's one of the reasons, that's the impetus of why I started the show. It was one of the things that really, you know, sought me to go after Aaron to try to bring him on, because I want to help him and I want to help this cause. I mean, I wish I had, you know, a sugar daddy or what have you to be able to just write a check, say whatever your costs are, let's do this, and then let him, you know, have the problem of trying to find where the waste is and chasing those. That's a good problem to have when you're chasing waste, you know, and not having to worry about the money coming in. And as far as I'm concerned, the city's chambers of commerce and the businesses that are represented by those chambers of commerce need to start opening their doors and need to basically understand what your needs are. And the reason I had him come on, because this is Thanksgiving tomorrow, and as you're looking at your table, and I hope that you read the proclamation from George Washington, that in understanding what Thanksgiving is supposed to be about, and like I said, we are supposed to be providing service for that great and almighty being, not necessarily enjoying a bounty of harvest because the pilgrims and Indians did it. That is the antithesis of really what our Thanksgiving is about. Our Thanksgiving is to be, you know, thankful for what we have and be gracious enough to give it to others. And I don't know of another institution or organization in this community that deserves more for people to contribute one way or the other. And I want to help these this organization. There's so not all much. Guys. There's a lot of gals in there too.
Yes, in fact, it's actually mostly women. Which we're pretty proud of. We could use some more men. We could use some more men. That's for sure.
Well, you have one behind a mic.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
When I can get the time to focus, there's just so many other things to focus on.
Everybody has a place at the table. And to be honest, Jar, you know, you helping spread the word, the awareness piece of this, you know, Frederick Douglass said, right, that's how we kill slavery, is that we shine a light on it. So it has to start there. And then for some of us, right, there's different, different roles that we'll play in that. But I certainly appreciate the one that you have played.
Right. And it's a privilege and an honor. I truly mean that. But let us kind of reflect on what our leftovers are tomorrow and, you know, think about what we might be able to give, or maybe look at, you know, instead of going into Black Friday, buying things to indulge ourselves, but let's start thinking of serving those who really need the service. This is a republic that was formed on individual liberty and individual sovereignty. And I cannot express to you enough how important and how precious those things are. And every profound leader and man and woman has said that once your liberty is lost, you will wail gnashing of teeth. And I'm paraphrasing, these are GR's words here. So I'm combining what they all say. They all say you will regret and rue the day that you've allowed your liberties to be usurped and taken from you. These are unalienable rights that Thomas Jefferson identified, and he understood profoundly the biblical implications behind those words, that we were granted these unalienable rights long before we came here, and that this nation evolved from the Enlightenment of Western Europe on the basis of the Magna Carta, individual property, individual liberty, and so forth, to create a republic that ensures and guarantees our inalienable rights. So that's the end of our show, as you can hear. And obviously, I have to end my rant right there, but I hope it doesn't end there. I hope it ends with resolving all of our problems. And so please enjoy your Thanksgiving, and we'll see you next week with Trevor Lawton. Thank you very much.